Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Sports City. It's your boy TP Timeless back at the helm. Got the kitchen wide open. The cafe is back in session. Let me get the correct statement out there. Post Merry Christmas to everybody out there, belated as we jump back into things in the kitchen. We got you guys for at least the next 90 minutes in the building. I got my co-host with me, my big brother, and this dude is off and running out here on the East Coast. I mean, he came from the Midwest, you know what I'm saying? He brought his talent to the East Coast, and this dude ain't doing nothing but showing up here in the tri-state area. R. Keezy, Mr. King, welcome to the cafe. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm feeling good, Thomas. Appreciate the lovely intro, but you know, we just here to do what we came to do right here inside Sports City, and that's get it cracking on the Crossover Cafe Master Chef Edition. Let's go.
Ah, that boy ain't playing, man. I feel some type of way, man, especially with everything that's going on here in the home front. But, you know, you got to deal with stuff as it comes. But, like he said, let me get back into, you know, that zen mode. I don't even know if I should be calling myself a zen, but I feel like it helps calm me down to talk my sports, talk my stuff again. But there's a lot of interesting stuff going on across the board, especially Western Conference-wise. It's gotten thicker and thicker, a lot of different storylines as well. And the Eastern Conference is starting to pan out as well, and interesting stories as well. We'll jump into all of these. We'll jump into every last bit of stories. But first and foremost, as we look at it right now, like the elephant in the room situation, and that is with LeBron James's injury. They're saying that he is going to be out for a couple of games. Your thoughts, as the Lakers have actually been turning this season around, sitting tied at fourth with the other Los Angeles team, as the Los Angeles Clippers, your thoughts on LeBron and the injury, and if the Lakers can survive, well, not just the really Sixers have to survive, let me say succeed while he's out.
Well, you know, Timeless, it's an unfortunate situation for LeBron James personally, as well as for the team, the Los Angeles Lakers, but this could be a blessing in disguise. Give LeBron some rest, give an opportunity for those other young players to find their way without LeBron. It's an opportunity to see what they've actually learned from LeBron James and then apply it and execute it on the court over the next several games, which he'll be out as he works on healing his body and getting right so he can return to that MVP level performance that he's been giving us this point in the season. 20-14, who would have thought LeBron literally would have came in and made that much of a difference right away with this group of young Lakers. Dare I add spice to this dish and say, who's the better leader, LeBron or Kobe Bryant? Nah. I ain't going to do that because there's some Kobe fans out there and they might get mad. So I'm going to just leave it at this. LeBron James, get healthy, get well, and let's all tune in tonight and let's see what these Lakers do without LeBron James. Let's see what they learn, Thomas. That's what I want to know.
Hold on. I'm not a Kobe fan, so I can eat. I can eat. I don't have a seafood allergy. You know what I'm saying? I can eat this food. You know what I'm saying? So
well,
if you want to, you can feed me. You know, you can feed me this. Like I want to hear the leadership role of qualities and difference, like Jeezy said, between Kobe, LeBron. If you want to, we can put this dish out there if you want.
Hey, let's go. Let's get it. Because, I mean, it has to be called into question, right? How this is maybe possibly impacted the movements of the Lakers. You know, when Kobe was in his final two seasons, I thought that had a huge impact on D'Angelo Russell and his performance. Add the fact that D'Angelo, you know, he dealt with a little bit of injuries, but it's hard to shine as the point guard or the two guard when all eyes are on Kobe Bryant in his last hoorah. Next thing you know, a couple years later, D'Angelo Russell on the first thing smoking to Brooklyn, still dealing with injuries, but he's looking like, hey, this is the player that the Lakers drafted, said they wanted and needed in their backcourt. Here we are, D'Angelo Russell under Kobe Bryant versus a Brandon Ingram and a Kyle Kuzma under LeBron James. Now, I do believe, memory serves me correct, we had Kuzma and Ingram under Kobe and LeBron. Is that correct, or am I off? I might be spacing the season. I had a lot going today, a lot of sports talk. Please assist.
I think last year was Kuzma's rookie season, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. And that was Kobe's last season, right?
No, Kobe's been gone for 2 years now.
It's been 2 years that fast. See what I'm saying? So,
yes.
But my point is you're talking young talent. You're talking about a team that's not projected to do very well, and just the difference in the level and the style of play. I think that is all a part of the leadership quality that, you know, could be addressed here in the kitchen when it comes to Kobe or LeBron. So let me ask you, if you had to choose with this current roster, we won't even talk about the roster Kobe was dealing with, but with this current roster, who do you think gets more? Does Kobe Bryant go 20-14 with this roster, or is this simply a feat only able to be accomplished by LeBron James?
Very interesting question. It's tough because LeBron's not the trigger man like Kobe is, you know, and it's interesting that LeBron still is probably the biggest wing that we've ever seen, you know what I'm saying? So, like, he puts a lot of pressure on the defense, so it's tougher for defenses to defend him, let alone try to load up in the paint. He's waiting to kick out to a shot where Kobe is the killer, where he wants the ball and he wants to take that shot, so it's tougher for Kobe. So I do have to agree with you with this current constructed roster. It would favor LeBron, but if they had the pieces around Kobe at that given time, I want to say the last two or three seasons, it probably would have been different. But that was literally a quilt. Like, when Kobe was leaving, it was a quilt. They just put a whole bunch of patches together and just hoped that it worked out. And I think, to me, and this is personal, I'm not even trying to, like, be analytical about it, I think they were doing as much as they could to try and get Kobe out of the door, because Kobe was suffering way too many injuries to try and still hoist up the shot that he wanted to, because that was the only basketball that he knew how to play. So I understand the way that you're going at it, but I think that if they worked on constructing the roster better, let alone the coach that they had at the helm didn't really feasibly seem fit for Kobe at that given time, too. It wasn't his notable Phil Jackson. I mean, now they got Luke Walton that kind of bought into the Steve Kerr situation and also knows a little bit about what Phil Jackson implemented as well. So it's different also. So, but I agree with you where you're coming from with this roster. I agree that LeBron would be the better leader of this character of players around him.
Absolutely, and I think that's expert analysis, and it might not have been obvious to some, but that was very obvious to you, astute observation there, because this roster was, for the most part, when you think about Rajon Rondo, Lance Stevenson, Tyson Chandler, some of the other names that are currently escaping my mind, these pieces were added specifically to fit around LeBron James when everyone was like, how are they going to fit? Well, the idea that Magic had was more playmakers around LeBron to get LeBron off the ball and allow LeBron to evolve in the latter parts of his career and do more damage down on the block. So with all that being said, LeBron James, get well. Several games out, the Lakers have Kyle Kuzma, opportunity to step forward and do even more and show where he's headed. Brandon Ingram, an opportunity back off of his injury. It's a couple, two, three games in, opportunity to step forward, do more, handling the ball. Lonzo Ball, not only is LeBron out who handles the rock, but Rajon Rondo is missing tonight's contest with the finger injury. So Here's Lonzo Ball. Is he ready to take another step and show that he really could and should continue to man that point guard spot for the very foreseeable future of his career in Los Angeles? And then you get help from the veterans off the bench. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Lance Stevenson, Tyson Chandler, and might I add, the young rookie, Zubac, has been playing outstanding basketball, shooting over 75% from the field and putting up multiple double-doubles in the last three games. blocking at least two shots in the last three games. He's looking like he's the real deal. So they're going to have a good chance and a good test against a young, aggressive, up-and-down team, the Sacramento Kings. They really like to get out and run. De'Aaron Fox claims he's the fastest man in the NBA with the ball in his hand from baseline to baseline. Buddy Hield has pretty much been averaging 28 points, I believe, so if it's like last five or six games, easy, Timeless. I mean, he is looking like the Buddy Hield of the Oklahoma Sooner days. And then you have Willie Cauley-Stein doing what he does, getting double-doubles, patrolling the paint. So it's going to be an interesting contest, but the Lakers, it really just comes down to what they're going to be able to get done in terms of stepping forward without LeBron James these next several games.
Okay, so I'm going to kind of bridge this into another California team because, fortunately, I have this way. I have to cook this way. So Christmas, we all know, this is where the injury happened in the matchup between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Golden State Warriors, in which I'm stunned. I can't even fathom what's going on. The Warriors lost by more than 20 points in this game with LeBron having this injury happen to him in the third, where you would think the Warriors would turn that on, click that switch, because they have that team. I can't even, like, say this for every team in the NBA. I have to be truthful. Where they have that switch where they can just click it on and just go on a 10-0 run. Let me just be fair, even though I've seen crazier runs that these Warriors go on, and it didn't happen. Now, with LeBron and, well, with the Lakers winning that game, does it build that confidence? You know what I'm saying? And we just discussed that right here. But also, with the Warriors losing that game, the issues that still remain, Draymond I want to say his accuracy. I don't want to say his efficiency because he's an efficient player, but his accuracy of knocking down shots, they're questioning that. Also, with Klay Thompson and his struggle of knocking down shots too, he's not been knocking down his shots as consistent as of late also. And the notable killers in Curry and Durant not, you know, fulfilling what they needed to do to try to win that game on this Christmas matchup. So, I mean, your thoughts outside of the injury with LeBron going down and the Warriors and their situation too. And we'll probably spill right into the Warriors situation because I'm kind of like mixing the dish together.
Well, as it's being mixed together, I'm definitely going to jump on the Warriors' side. I think I've said all I have to say at this point on the Lakers without repeating myself. That being said, let's take a good look at the standings as both teams are back in action tonight. You see who's at the top in the West, right? Golden State, still number one in the West. Is there really a cause for alarm when you're sitting 15-4 at home, 8-8 on the road, you're 13-8 in conference play, 7-3 over your last 10 games? Is one loss count as a streak? I doubt it. Tonight, the Golden State Warriors take on the Portland Trail Blazers. I say they bounce back. Can both teams get the opportunity to bounce back right away? I mean, look, you played on Christmas. You got Wednesday to travel. You're back on the court on Thursday. That's the NBA life. A day in between for rest, travel, and you lace up, and you go at it again. It's a marathon, not a sprint. I'm very confident in, you know, the Golden State Warriors being exactly who they are, who we all think they are. Defending champs. They've proven themselves. Now, can Klay Thompson shoot better? Yes. Does Klay have some games where he stinks up the gym with his shooting? Absolutely. Every season since he's been in the NBA. But we still refer to Klay Thompson as one of the top two shooters of all time, his backcourt running mate being the other. Even getting that from other, you know, Hall of Famers and NBA champions in Joe Dumars and Isaiah. And they will sit down, you know, with the Splash Bros, meet the Bad Boys conversation. So, look, I'm not worried about Golden State. I'm not worried about Kevin Durant. I'm not worried about Draymond Green, whether Draymond is scoring, whether he's hitting a three. I mean, this team is really good. They're stacked up top, up front. So, if there's a concern or a cause for alarm, I don't think we're going to really see it and have to, you know, really make it a conversation until we get into the playoffs. That's when the depth is really going to hit, you know, Golden State and be potentially an issue, potentially. But if the starting five of Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, and DeMarcus Cousins is rolling and has momentum, the depth is not a problem. You have to deal with that starting five, and it is still, on paper, the best starting five in the NBA.
I definitely understand where you come from. And the crazy part is, it's like, we don't really get to talk about the Warriors because it's like they're off and running and doing so well throughout the season. It's like when they face a little adversity, it's like, I want to cook that dish. It's like just to discuss it, you know what I'm saying? And knowing that they have these issues that are lingering, that they are 500 on the road and, you know, losing this game up against the Lakers, where I'm not going to lie, if this was a game seven, I'm picking the Warriors to win this game and run off with the Western Conference title at this point in time. But it wasn't. It was just a Christmas Day matchup. And not to overlook the fact that it was a Christmas Day matchup, but knowing that everybody was there and only the one person that was, you know, out due to injury was LeBron at that given time in the second half. So it's like just to see where they are, knowing that, you know, Coach Walton or Luke Walton has an in with the Warriors and knows, you know, a decent amount what goes on around Steve Kerr and them is very interesting. But just to see these issues linger is something I wanted to touch on. And I agree, as we get closer to the month of, like, February and March, where we start to see everybody make their push for positioning for the playoff window, that's a whole nother situation. But as of right now, especially with the month of December closing, this is a very interesting topic to see if this does linger and goes into the you know, the year 2019, and seeing if they are still having these up and down situations where they're winning about four, lose a game here, you know, and they're starting to look human. They are starting to look human to me. But like I said, like Roy said, they do have the notable killers. They don't even have their real starting five as they want to at this point in time, and they're still probably the dangerous front five, if you will, that they're putting out on a game-by-game basis. But I just wanted to throw that out there, especially with Clay trying to answer questions, and he was getting frustrated within an interview as of today, and Draymond, and these teams are now actually hoping that the ball rotates to Draymond so he could actually have that jump shot to give themselves a considerable shot at trying to get a rebound. If he knocks down a shot, I think that builds the confidence. If he misses, it gives the team another shot to rebound and start all over again on the offensive side of the ball.
Okay. Yeah, because what you have, Timeless, is you got teams trying to find ways or, you know, copycat what other teams have done to maybe get a victory. And so let's say on a particular night, the team that last defeated the Warriors said, we're going to force the ball to move. We know they're going to have ball movement, but we want the shot to come from Draymond. Okay. Meanwhile, Draymond's averaging a team high 7.9 rebounds and 6.6 assists, and he's blocking 1.9 steals. So those categories that he's leading his team in, are they concerned about his points? Absolutely not. Can you really defeat the Warriors by saying, you know, we'll live with Draymond Green shooting? Like, and Clay and Kevin aren't there, and like, they're still not taking, you know, 19.5 field goal attempts between Durant and Curry, you know, league MVPs. They're getting their shots. Klay Thompson's at basically 19 shots himself at 18.7 to be exact. We know where the scoring punch is coming from. It is just about, you know, from game to game. Again, it's a marathon. It's a copycat league. Everybody's going to try everything because this is still the team to beat. They have been for the last 4 to 5 seasons, and they will continue to be as so long as this roster is currently constructed with a core three. Because we know KD just got there in the last couple of seasons. But so long as that core of Steph, Clay, and Draymond Green are together, you're talking about the guts and the pulse of that team that makes it go. Kevin Durant and DeMarcus Cousins are like cherries on top and icing, man. And it's probably so sweet to those Golden State Warrior fans.
It just like you said, I mean, you know, it's kind of like how I was mentioning the last show with Nerlens Noel. It's not what he does on the stat sheet, it's what he does on the floor. And this is similar to what you're throwing out there with Draymond Green. But actually, I have to kind of disagree with you because, yes, I would rather Draymond take the shot. Like, you got a whole bunch of killers, including when DeMarcus gets in there and he gets the steal of the offense, that he could hit shots or go in the paint and make things happen. If Draymond is struggling, shoot the ball. I don't even want to see Klay take shots and him with his struggle right now, and he hits a shot. He's liable, not to say that it always happens, but he's liable to go off for like a 17-point quarter. Like, we've seen him go off for 37 in a quarter. So you don't want to see that ball fall. I'd rather tell my defenders to play all of them close, at least try to get your hand in their gut, so just to make them dribble the ball, get off of that line so they can make another pass. And force it to Draymond. Hopefully Draymond doesn't have a clear shot to the lane. Force him to try and make shots and try to get rebounds, box out, make things happen. Do something different that the Warriors didn't see because he's struggling right now. He is struggling. I'd rather take advantage of that situation than worry about, if the other guys are going to knock down shots, because their percentages of knocking down shots is at a better clip than what Draymond is going to do. We all know that Draymond has capability of knocking down shots. He's had 40-point games in the NBA Finals, but as of right now, with every camera in his face, all of the stuff that happened earlier in the season with him and Kevin Durant, I think this is something that is, I don't want to say rattling him, but this is something that's giving him a thought. It is something that's giving him a thought. And if this is something that I was approaching the Warriors with, you doggone right. Every huddle, force these guys to drive, make them kick. If it's in Draymond's lap, let him shoot. Let him have that confidence. If he's not knocking it down, because he's not the consistent shooter, let him kill us. I would rather live with that than watch Curry go off for a 9-0 run himself, or watch Klay go off for a 9-0 run himself, or Durant. Like, these guys can knock down three threes quickly, all three of them. So I'd rather the weaker shooter, even though I feel like I'm bad at saying weaker shooter, but the weaker shooter and Draymond have the approach to try and knock down shots. If I was coaching, I'd rather that. I would.
I understand. I think it's a mistake, right? Because, like, here's how I'm doing it. Do we really think the Golden State Warriors that has such ball movement by design, do you really think the defense is forcing the ball to move? No, they're not. Are Draymond's teammates comfortable with him taking those shots? Absolutely. Why? Because let's say I'm in a shooting slump, right? If I'm in a slump, guess what I need to get out of the slump? I need to get shots on goal, right? Not just practice shots, but shots that count and that matter. So if you believe that you're forcing me to get shots up, are you forcibly helping me or forcibly hurting me? Because he's a pro, right? Professional. He's an NBA champion. Do we really believe and think that he's going to continue to shoot basically a little over 40%, 41% all season long? A guy who's practically 48, 49 for his career? Really? I think not. Be careful what you ask for. And you can keep playing that style if you choose to, which some teams, again, if you really believe you're forcing the ball and shots to come to Draymond, then you're not doing a good enough job, because he's only averaging 7 shots a game. You're not doing a good enough job. That's why I laid out the field goal attempts. Like, this is per game. Draymond's not getting 10 shots. So his 7 shots, I mean, again, unless we're talking about situationally, and it has to be specific to the situation from game to game, like, you know, could this be a game-changing shot attempt? That's the only impact. Because in terms of just per game, 7 is not enough to be a factor in any league, in my opinion. If you're a high-level player, that doesn't mean you're a scorer. Doesn't mean you're a shooter. KD, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, again, when DeMarcus Cousins gets back, I doubt that any of this is going to be food for thought. But tonight, it's a little bit of a conversation. It's a little bit of a dish,
worried. Like I said, we got to take advantage of the situation. I can't totally run away from it and throw it out the window. I can't. I got to cook with this stuff. Now, I got to. Okay. Here we are, right? Eastern Conference, and I don't even feel like comfortable like coming at this certain way, but it's like it's starting to fizzle out how the Eastern Conference notably looks year in, year out. And at the beginning of the season, it was looking good in the Eastern Conference, where, you know, at least the first 8 teams were playing well. At 7-8, you have the Charlotte Hornets and the Heat. They are both under 500. And I think there's teams that are beneath them as of the 8th seed that can potentially catch them, including the Brooklyn Nets and the addition of Trevor Ariza going to the Washington Wizards. I think this could potentially turn them around as they try to get to full strength and as well as they try to bring Dwight Howard back into this roster as well. But knowing that there is a heavy mix-up at the top of the Eastern Conference, I want to say from 5 up, I would try to include the Pistons from 6, but they're at 500. I really don't know the identity of this team because they'll lose some questionable games. And I hate to pick on a former guy of mine. He used to be a part of the Thunder roster, but he is so inconsistent. It's like I don't know how to pinpoint it, so I'm not going to talk too much about him. But Reggie Jackson, you don't know which Reggie you're going to see. In fact, the people that I know out in the Detroit area, they said that they've been actually speaking on trying to get Reggie out of there. So I don't know if that is true or not, but it is interesting to hear until they get a real floor general to try and replace him on a consistent basis. But from 5-1 from the Celtics up, it is a very close race. The Celtics have 13 losses and they're tied with the Sixers at this point in time, in which that was an interesting Christmas matchup as well, where Kyrie ended up going off also. But that, I'm telling you, it feels like the old school 80s where Dr. J and Bird and them used to go at it. But it is very interesting to see how these teams are kind of jam-packed at the top, and they really can't have too much room for error as they could potentially get leapfrogged. Milwaukee fought their way back into this grand scheme as well with their clear-cut situation up against the Knicks as well. But your thoughts as a whole in general, Eastern Conference, I mean, you could pick a team we could start to chew on, or we could go all across the board, at least the top five. If you want to go from 6 down, we can too.
Well, you know, there's been a lot of conversation here, you know, inside Sports City about the Raptors, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Sixers, the Celtics. So let's talk a little bit about the Indiana Pacers sitting at number 3 at 23-12, right? 17-5 within the conference, 12-5 at home, 11-7 on the road. Been in some battles over the last 10 games. Happened to be 8-2 over the last 10 contests. You remember me saying a few weeks ago that I had concern, and this is prior to Victor Oladipo going out with his knee injury, right? I was really concerned with the number of field goal attempts that he was putting up. He was the only person putting up double-digit field goal attempts. Things have changed, and it's a good change because now, Thomas, we're sitting in a good spot for balance for this Indiana Pacers team who has to win with a balanced attack and good team defense, right? So you now have Bojan Bogdanovic attempting 11.2 field goals per game. You have Miles Turner at 10.7 attempts per game and Thad Young at 10.2. And then you have your Tyreke Evans off the bench. Sometimes he's in the starting lineup due to the fact of injuries. And then Sabonis off the bench at 9.1. This is what gives this Pacers team his best chance at winning. This is why they're deep. When you have Victor Oladipo as your primary scorer at 20 points per game, and then you're getting 5 guys on a consistent basis between 10.5 and 16 points per night. Balanced attack in Indiana, a team that is going to be overlooked in conversation because, you know, look, they're just going to continue to always suffer from the whole small market thing until we get to the postseason play and they can draw the right matchup for coverage. But with all that being said, it's not an issue. We're not concerned with, you know, East Coast or West Coast bias and small market issues. We have to focus in on Miles Turner and Bojan Bogdanovic. My question to you, Thomas, is what we're getting from Miles Turner over the last few games in terms of him averaging double-doubles. We know he's going to, you know, be right there with block shots per game. I believe he's leading the league in blocks per game at 2.8. Is he for real? Can he keep it up for the remainder of the season? And then when it comes to Bojan Bogdanovic, are you surprised by his consistency and what he's currently, started to add to his game? Not a lot of assists, but just to be able to get a couple assists from your wing guy, who at one point was really just viewed as a scorer. He wasn't even a 3-and-D guy, but now he's locked in at that starting small forward in Indiana. Your thoughts on Miles Turner and Bojan Bogdanović?
This is, and I hate to, like, I don't even think I'm being rude, but I'm going to just say it the right way. This is very easy to attack without question on both individuals with Miles Turner and Bogdanović. One, Bogdanović and his brother out there in Sacramento, both of these guys have been knocking down shots at an enormous clip. If anybody's been keeping up with the Sacramento Kings, and these guys are confident and comfortable with taking a shot. They could care less on who wants them to take the shot or not, but they've been coming down with these shots consistently. So both of the Bogdanovichs, and I don't even want to take too much away from the Kings if we actually get to that point in time here in the kitchen, but without question, I think the team actually has confidence in him to knock down the shot and be another guy outside of Victor Oladipo to be one of the guys that if the shot clock is down, the ball comes to them, that they successfully think that that's a good move by measure within the grand scheme of things of that offense. So I think Bogdanović, without question, is a great knockdown shooter, has built confidence in his game and has that consistency. And the crazy part about it is a lot of the teams in the NBA continue to leave these guys open. They continue to leave them open at the bottom of the shot clock when it's approaching 5 or 6 or 6 seconds on the clock, and the next thing you know, they end up with the ball. They're by themselves. It's like, did you guys not get the scouting report? Did you not hear what was going on that bulletin board? If not, we need to get to the scouts for your team to understand what was going on at that given point in time. Now, Miles Turner, I'm not saying that he is him, you know what I'm saying, in terms of saying similar to Joel Embiid. And not to say that he is Joel Embiid. I think Embiid has a leg up on him, but Miles Turner is knocking down the outside shot with consistency. When these bigs come out there to try to defend and close out on the shot, he can attack the rim and finish. And that is big for a big man of his caliber, that he's able to put it on the floor with confidence and not carry or travel or do anything crazy and score at the rim. And he's been doing it all season long, including last season too. I can't even overlook what he was able to do last season coming into this season as well. If he continues to do this, this puts a lot of pressure on a lot of the bigs across the, let me just say, the Eastern Conference, because a lot of them don't want to step out there. They're looking at him like knock down the shot, because if so, it's a race to the rim, and their back is to it. So a lot of times they're not going to get to it. They won't probably block the shot, and he's going to end up going for the rim. So it's going to be a dunk attempt, and the big has to, whether face getting dunked on or try to, you know, end up getting embarrassed or hurting something or finished with a block. So those options are all there available for Miles Turner. So I think with him on the offensive side of the ball, it's been great for the Pacers' success right now and what they've been able to get out of, you know, Victor being the star and everybody else falling into place and getting, you know, that play out of Collison being the floor general, Bogdanović, like we mentioned, and Thaddeus actually being, I don't really want to say the defensive stopper, but one of the anchors in the midst of the thing that helped this Pacers team move on. And he had a big game just recent as well, too. So I've been watching Thaddeus for some time, ever since he's with your boys out there in Philly, too. So, ever since he's enjoyed the Tech. So, I've been watching him. It is a great story to watch with this Pacers being in the midst of things ahead of the Celtics at this point in time, too. And the notable names that you just mentioned, the guys that a lot of the teams will probably look past, but they need to pay attention to, and that being Miles Turner or Bojan Bogdanović.
Absolutely. I agree with you, Thomas. And, again, when you mentioned the standings, I mean, this team is two and a half games back from being in first place in the Eastern Conference. That says a lot right there about the job Nate McMillan has done as the head coach. Can't overlook him. I mean, you know, as a guy who plays fantasy basketball, one thing that I've always noticed is regardless of who your player is, and especially if he's not like, you know, a superstar, James Harden, LeBron James, you know, Kyrie Irving, you know, Anthony Davis and the ilk like that, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, your fringe players, and if they're perimeter-oriented players, oh, they're going to struggle when they match up against the Indiana Pacers. Take, for example, if you have players in fantasy who play for the Atlanta Hawks, well, chances are they're not shooting the ball well in terms of your wings, your point guard, your shooting guard, your small forward. Now, we all just probably saw the recent contest where the bigs seemed to have their way early versus the Indiana Pacers. I'm talking Deadman and John Collins. So a little bit of foul trouble that particular night. But in the end, the bottom line was the Indiana Pacers still won that game with no real problems at all. And this is with Miles Turner in foul trouble because, one, they're a veteran-laden team. They have veteran leadership. They have a coach of the year, head coach in Nate McMillan. And this team is for real. It's Indiana. It's basketball. It's a whole nother level when it comes to everyone in Indiana about basketball. They take it very seriously. And it's not about the glitz and the glam and all the, you know, spectacular stuff. And I don't have no problems with the flashy play. But Indiana basketball is just hard-nosed, tough-nosed basketball. And that's what this Pacers team represents. So we're definitely going to keep our eyes on this Indiana Pacers squad as we continue to go throughout this season here inside the kitchen. Then you spoke about some teams, Timeless, below number five, you know, that's 6, 7, 8. But I want to ask you your thoughts on the team currently sitting at number 8, the Miami Heat. Well, you know, they say they're kind of tied, but obviously the tiebreaker right now is going to go to the Charlotte Hornets. They're above them in the standings. Both teams 16 of 17. Goran Dragic has such an injury. He's going to be out for, looks like, 2 months. Enter Justice Winslow. Coach Eric Spoelstra is going on record and saying he's really pleased and he loves the job that Justice Winslow has been doing in terms of manning the point. He feels like he's the best option for the team at point guard. This is over Tyler Johnson. Even though he handles the ball some and distributes a little, Josh Richardson, who is expected to be their scoring, you know, wing player, but he has evolved his game to do some playmaking. So he has nights where he might have 4 to 5 assists. And then you have the playmaking power forward in James Johnson. But it is, again, Justice Winslow that Coach Eric Spoelstra said he loves his pace, he loves his tempo, and he gets that team into their stuff, and he's been highly effective. Talk a little bit about what you've seen from Justice Winslow this season and his tremendous improvement.
Well, one, he's a Duke product, and I don't like to say that too. But two, he's from the Texas area, and three, him being a left-handed guy and can handle the ball, he watched James Harden. So it's almost like he's been trying to work on this throughout his run of, I guess I want to say high school, going to college for a short stint and coming to the league. So he's kind of prepared for the situation. But the best thing I look at is his length and his ability to cause a mismatch at the top of the game right there. A lot of point guards aren't as tall as he is, and he's able to get off the floor as well. So it puts a lot of pressure on a lot of these defenses that are trying to deal with Justice Winslow, and he has confidence in his jump shot. He can get to the rim. That's something that he wants to do. He wants to get to the rim and finish. And all he really needs is a lot of these guys to help, you know, contribute, whether it's knocking down shots while he's attracting defense to him, or you know, more or less setting that screen and working that pick and roll as best as possible for this this Heat team. But I definitely think that this is a great situation for Spoelstra to kind of survive the storm. And I'm going to actually look at this kind of personal, because I want the Heat to be in the midst of things in the top 8 at the end of the season, because I want to see Wade at least fight in the playoffs. I mean, last year you guys being the Sixers took him out in the playoffs, and it was interesting in the first couple of games because the Heat actually put pressure on the Sixers, but the Sixers ended up outlasting them in the series. But for this to be Dwayne Wade's last season, this is the farewell tour, and they're actually playing decent. They're playing near 500 ball. They're a game under, but still I consider this 500 ball, and they're trying to put it together while they're injured right now. This is huge for the Heat. I'm looking at that personally. I want to see them play beyond, you know, April 12th, April 15th era, because that'll probably be the end of the season, and that's when the playoffs kick off. But I want to see the Heat there just to see Wade off in the playoffs, because notably you see a lot of the greats leave the game, not in the playoffs. Michael Jordan left the game with the Wizards, not in the playoffs. Kobe left the game, not in the playoffs. Like, I want to see that happen. Like, at least he's actually fighting to try and really get a championship run, even though I doubt that the Heat will even get to the Eastern semis or the Eastern Conference Finals. But it'd be great to just see team watching Wade come off the bench and try to have some input in a series. That would be so great to watch it kind of close out like that. But, again, with the way that this roster is constructed, especially the starting five, to get back to what you're saying, this is a great situation for Winslow to make a name for himself. And actually, this could actually slow up a lot of things when Dragic gets back. Dragic will probably end up being a starter, but I want to figure out if this is working. They pick up wins. What's it supposed to do? Does he go with the hot hand in Winslow, or does he go with the guy in Dragic that's notably able to, you know, make things happen on the floor to score to, like this is going to be a tough situation, and both of these guys are lefty point guards at this point in time, too. But your thoughts on it, how do you feel about Winslow being the showrunner for the Heat at this point in time?
Well, I actually love it. And, you know, I really liked your analysis where you began with mentioning where he was reared in Texas and then having the opportunity to witness the type of offensive dominance James Harden was putting on the league as a Rocket. And, you know, sometimes it's better late than never. And that's what I think the case is here with Justice Winslow. I think a lot of people started to view Justice as a bust. But here he is with a much improved 3-point shot this season, shooting a career high 39% from three, right? And improved handles. And when you watch him, Timeless, sometimes what I'm seeing, I feel like I'm looking at Harden's body language. It's like I feel like sometimes I'm watching movements like, you know, that's something James would do, right? His step-back jumper, you know, his attacking the rack, his ability to finish with the floater, with the lefty, and creating for others. Small sample size serving over the last 10 games. And Justice actually missed a game due to an ankle sprain, right? And he had, you know, when he got injured in that one game, he only played 15 minutes. But over these last 9 games he actually played in, Justice Winslow is currently averaging 15 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.3 steals, right? While shooting 50% from the field. This is a much improved Justice Winslow. His December numbers are outstanding, pretty much the same as I listed, 14 points, 5 and 4 with the steals, shooting 49% in 30 minutes. Watching them play and seeing this Miami Heat team as a whole, they definitely respond to his leadership. And then he's picking and choosing spots in multiple games. I've witnessed Justice Winslow attempt to be team's closer while in the start, depending on the matchups, you might see the ball go in early to get Hassan Whiteside off and then move back outside. You're going to catch Richardson bombing away from three or hitting mid-ranges, and they like to get out in transition and run. And then you got Derrick Jones Jr., who's, you know, a highlight reel waiting to happen with some explosive leaping and dunks. And then you got James Johnson that I mentioned, who is a power forward capable of taking it off the glass on the defensive rebound, pushing it up the floor, and making a play for himself or his teammates. And Winslow has found a way to knock down that corner three ball on a consistent basis, and he has really improved tremendously. Thomas, he has multiple games this season over 20 points, and he's looking like a legitimate NBA starting point guard / two guard. Like, I mean, we always thought he would be a combo guard, but, you know, 20 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. You got games where he had 21 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists. You know, against the Lakers on December 10th, he had 28 points and 7 rebounds and just a handful of assists, but he was 6 of 10 from 3 land. Like, we're talking Justice Winslow. Let me set the perspective real quick. I mean, this guy from 3, his first 2 seasons in the league, he was 27% and 20%. Last year, in just 68 games because he's been dealing with injuries his entire career for the most part. He shot 38%, but he was only attempting 1.9. This year, he's increased his attempts to 3.6. He's making 1.4, but as of late, he's rolling. Solid percentages, increased point production, increased production over across the board in terms of the rebounds and the assists. All credit has to go to Eric Spoelstra, obviously Pat Riley. You know, who did we think we were second guessing, Thomas? That's the question that might be, you know, more apt to ask at this point. Who were we second guessing? Like, Pat Riley doesn't know talent? Really? Is that what we were thinking? Come on, man. We're talking Pat Riley. Pat Riley knows a winner. Like, he knows a guy that's going to get in the gym, that's going to work hard, he's going to be a student of the game, who's going to be diligent. And as you mentioned, he came from Duke, a winning program. So Coach K doesn't know a winner. Coach K doesn't know work ethic. Coach K doesn't teach work ethic. Really? Okay. So, again, sometimes guys get off to slow starts because they're battling injuries, and then the roster does not put them in their best position, their optimum position. Lo and behold, injury to Goran Dragic, and based on how this roster is constructed, there's no Shabazz Napier, there's no any other little so-called point guard that all they can do is bring the ball up and set it up. There's only Justice Winslow, who's been viewed as a 6'7", 225 small forward, who's really a 6'7", 225 combo guard. Justice Winslow, in my opinion, Thomas, has just discovered his best position in the NBA, and there's no going back. Goran Dragic is the older player between the two. He's provided great leadership. He's an outstanding veteran, right? And when healthy, you're going to defer to him because he's healthy. But the reality is he's 32. So by the time this 2019-2020 season starts next year, he'll be 33 years of age. And the league is getting younger and it's getting faster, and you have to be durable. And at some point, I think Spo and Pat Riley, they're not afraid to hand the keys over to a guy like Winslow, who's working really hard to prove himself this season. So I like the Miami Heat. I like what they have, and I agree with you. It would be awesome for the Miami Heat and D-Wade to be a top eight team, even if they're the number eight seed. What a way to go out. Give us a glimpse of Flash, playoff version.
Right. I had to throw that at you. I wanted to see if you wanted to do it personal or not, but you answered it. So you want to see the Heat there as well. I just want to see Wade close out. For the way that he came into the league and, you know, what he was able to do for this Heat team. He was a part of all of their championships. That did, well, he left because of, you know, the melee at that, you know, as of LeBron leaving, and he left, and then he jumped around the league, and they came back. And it's fitting that he's back in a Heat jersey. But I want to see how far they can go. If this team does have that fight in them, which I doubt that they'll, if they stay at the eighth seed, I doubt that they beat the Raptors. So it would probably be a first-round exit. But it would be crazy to see Wade get out there and kind of one of those 19 to 24 point nights in a game where they needed it and he took it to win like that. That just would be fitting for a guy like Wade, because he was able to do that against all odds. I still remember his rookie season when they made the playoffs, him and Lamar Odom. And at that time, one of my favorite point guards at that point in time was Baron Davis. And Wade bullied the heck out of Baron Davis and watched the Hornets go out of the playoffs. Like, he was that guy that made that happen. And built his name off of that, brought that championship down here as well with Shaq, and, you know, the rest is history. I mean, three championships for a guy like Flash. So I want to see the team do it, and with him, not because of him, because, it, you know, he's done enough for this organization, so hopefully they can get it together. But I like the way that you threw that out there with Spoelstra and his coaching ability. It's tough because, you know, teams that do well, they – you know, especially in their situation, knowing that the hand that they're dealt, they got to go out there and play the hand and they're able to survive with the hand that Spoelstra has right now. And if they're, you know, below seventh seed or below sixth seed, they don't look at coach of the year, but they need to look at this type of situation because the Heat, as they're constructed, aren't one of those teams that you would think be in the saddle to try and be, you know, a playoff team moving forward. But this is only the early portion of the season. It's still the first half of the season, but supposed to we definitely got an eye on what you're doing right now here in the kitchen. Right above them are the Charlotte Hornets also. With their play, they've been 5-5 in the last 10 games. Can they play as consistent as needed to hang on to a top eight seed, or do you think they fall as time goes on, or especially as we get closer to the month of March and April in 2019?
Thought on the Charlotte Hornets, and I'm gonna add my Sixers to this. What is the problem with winning on the road? I mean, my goodness, 4-10 on the road, Kemba Walker. I mean, Kemba is having a phenomenal year, right? A phenomenal season. But he can't do it all alone. And obviously, he can't close the show on the road without help. They're 12-7 at home, 5-5 over the last 10. And the current two-game skid, it is road woes. In the East, Robos, you got a lot of veterans in Charlotte. I mean, let's just start with, you know, Kemba Walker. You know, he's probably the youngest of these veterans, right? And most significant and impactful. But when you think Tony Parker's backing him up off the bench, then you have Nicholas Batum logging major minutes, Marvin Williams, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Cody Zeller, Frank Kaminsky. Like, where's the youth? There's Jeremy Lamb, but are we through Jeremy Lamb? How are they using Jeremy Lamb? You're starting to see a little bit more of Malik Monk this season, but is he ready? Are you going to unleash him? Are there minutes available? Like, coach, what's the rotation? Who's who? Who can you rely on? Who are you going to give a chance to prove that you can rely on him, that he can be consistent? And then there's the rookie, Miles Bridges. Everyone is excited. I mean, people are on the edge of their seats in anticipation that they free Miles Bridges to be a player. So many rookies in this year's draft are contributing, you know, impactful performances for their team that's leading towards wins. But Miles Bridges is being relegated right now to just a highlight reel. Hey, Miles Bridges had a great block, 6'7", 200-plus pounds, playing small forward and some power forward off the bench. He's another two-guard. He's another guy who, you know, I think – eventually will be at his best playing shooting guard in the NBA. But all we get is sample sizes. He had a great dunk. He caught one off the rim. He had a putback. He caught a lob dunk. He made a three. Hey, look, can we get Miles Bridges to the tune of 26 minutes every night with no less than 12 to 13 field goal attempts? I think they'll find a sixth man in Miles Bridges before this season is out if they make a commitment to him. So I think there's some ego thing going on possibly that head coach James Borrego has to manage there. Is his first year as the head coach because Steve Clifford is out and he's in Orlando now. And then there's Kemba Walker becoming a free agent. He's trying to, you know, earn his money for free agency. But if this team is going to hold on to a playoff spot and then at a high level in the postseason, they've got to identify a rotation that gets them wins on the road, most importantly.
And I understand where you're coming from. You know, saying Kemba first because he is the notable name, but they, just like you said, and like Shaq made it, you know, fitting to others, the rest of the team has to step up. And if they can get that consistent play, especially on the road, then we'll probably see more of the wins. But 4-10 on the road, that is pretty questionable. But I do want to see them get out there because of everything Kemba has faced, I want to say up until this season, of saying that, well, they won't try to give him the contract that he wants to keep him in Charlotte. They've been talking about moving him, you know, just the rumor mill, things like that. I love to see the fight in Kemba. And knowing that, I mean, he is from Mount Vernon, which is 15 minutes from where I am. He's from New York, but he went to school out here in Connecticut. And I know that a lot of people out here love him. People out here know him also. So it's, you know, just fitting to watch Kemba try to go off and do what he can for the Charlotte Hornets team. But he has to continue to play like this for the remainder of the season to try and keep them there. I don't know if they hang on. Like I said, there's grumblings of teams that are below that AC that I think could probably leapfrog him. But it would be great to see how much fight he has in him to try and hang on to that situation and at least be a top.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned he has to play at this high level. What are your thoughts on his durability to be able to, you know, do the thing that he does night in and night out, two games, and then we have to start thinking postseason, because I believe this is a year that Michael Jordan and that Hornets franchise want to make the playoffs. Can he continue at this rate?
It's tough. I think so. I'm going to be confident and be optimistic about this. Yes, I think Kemba can continue to play like this, but he just needs at least two players. I'm not going to just say he needs another player. He needs two players to at least come with him. Like somebody has to help him. If he's going on for more than 27 points, and then I feel like I'm trying to be fair to him, but I know that this is the clip that he has to score for Charlotte to be successful, because we've seen him put up 50-point nights already. So it's like Kemba has to play like this. I really think it's going to take another two people to come along with him to try and carry this out if they can. But like I said, in the Eastern Conference, you've got the Nets that have turned this situation around, where I thought the Nets wouldn't even be sniffing the playoffs. They are now a team that you have to worry about. And the Wizards, with them getting an extension on the defense with Ariza and already having guys like Jeff Green and them on this roster, nothing has happened with Bradley Beal or John Wall. So they're all there. If Ariza could just be that, you know, the mixing spoon, if you will, to kind of calm everything down and telling them how far he's been in his NBA career to kind of get things turned around in Washington, I think Scott Brooks and this team could actually try and get back into this thing. But they have a long road ahead of them to at least get into this discussion. They're at least four games back from that AC. So it is feasible, but they have work to do, and they need the consistency, and plus they need everybody back together, full unit, while they're trying to get this figured out. But I am going to be optimistic and say that Kemba can do this, but he needs at least another two players to at least give him another, let's just say, 13.5 points a game. He needs at least another two consistently to give him that, at least.
Understood. I concur. I think Kemba's up for the task in terms of continuing to perform at this high level. I mean, he's proven to be durable over the last few seasons at 81 and 79 games. I mean, each of the last three, I think one was 81, another was 79. He was back to 81 last year. He's currently, you know, 33 for 33. That being said, whether he misses one or two games, as you pointed out, others have to step up. He's getting 15 points from Jeremy Lamb. The next up is a guy off the bench, and Malik Monk. But my concern with Monk is he's a repeat of Lamb. He's much of the same. It's not like he's doing the different stuff, and he's actually not even as good as Lamb in terms of stats when you're talking rebounds. I mean, they're both doing the two assists, and he's not getting, you know, a full steal per game like Lamb, right? But 10 points in 19 minutes, and then that's it, Timeless. You get 9.6 from Parker. You're getting 9.6 from Marvin Williams as an average, 9.1 from Cody Zeller, 9 flat from Nick Batum. I'm saying, like, we just got finished talking about, you know, some teams that were sitting up, you know, higher. Even a team that's lower, the Miami Heat, they have 6, 7, 8 guys, you know, doing 10 points or better. You have the Indiana Pacers. They got 6, 7 guys doing 10 points or better. And here, this Charlotte team only really has the three. I mean, if we round up the other two, Parker and Williams, their inconsistency, they got five guys doing 10 points at 9.6. That's a problem. That's not going to advance you out of the first round, even if you make the playoffs, like you said, without someone coming on like gangbusters. And, you know, I got to believe that there are some others out there that can see the potential in one Miles Bridges and, you know, how to start calling for, you know, some shot attempts. I mean, he's getting 20 minutes, but, you know, 20 minutes and six shot attempts per game while he's efficient at 46-47% from the field is not enough. Again, Kemba, Lamb, Monk need help, and they need help from another young player, not Tony Parker, not Marvin Williams, not Cody Zeller. They need help. So those are my thoughts on the Hornets and on whether or not Kemba Walker can continue to perform at this high level, and I think that he will.
Let me stir things up in the Eastern Conference. I want to put you on the hot seat. Giannis, the MVP, how do you feel about it?
Oh, man, how do I feel about it? It's warranted. I don't view it like he's not an MVP candidate. I want more. I'm a fan. I love what he brings to the table. I love how hard he works at improving. I love his transformation, what he did with his body. When you think how Ralph Finney was, and now, I mean, this dude literally looks like NBA basketball player. I mean, man, what a body. What work he's put in the gym in terms of putting on, I think I read somewhere he put on about 51 pounds of muscle. He's dominating points in the paint, leads the NBA. If it's in his reach, he's going to dunk on you. I'm talking about a guy that's getting like 11-plus rebounds per game, capable of getting you 5-plus, almost I think around like 7 assists per game this season. What else is he doing? I mean, he's balling out. He's a legit MVP candidate, right? I have no issues with that. But my cause for concern with Giannis really being the league's MVP is that he cannot beat you with a jump shot. Like, in a clutch moment, and we know all the greats. I mean, everybody knows how great Isaiah Thomas was as a ball handler and being able to slice up a defense and get into the paint. We all know how athletic and the hang time his heirs, Michael Jordan, had to be able to get into the paint and hang, right? But guys like that from that era, fast forward really quick, Klay Thompson, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Carmelo Anthony, who was never considered like really like uber athletic. These guys hit clutch shots and game winners because they could perimeter shot 12 footer, 15, 17, 22 feet, whatever the case. And if Giannis is working as hard as he says he is at improving his three, he has to start taking perimeter shots every night. Like, if you're the man, don't worry about your stats. Don't worry about your percentages. Look, I need two shots per quarter every game from the right and the left side. You decide whether it's a three or whether it's a mid-range, 15 to 17 footer, 12 feet. I don't care. I need a jumper in game, in the flow of the game, in the contest. I need to see that. Until I really see that, is he going to be a conversation piece for the MVP? Absolutely. Can he be a winner of the MVP? In my opinion, no. No. That's what I think.
brutal, brutal. This guy's brutal. C-Sports, that's why they call me the Timeless Wonder. I mean, that's cheesy, man. I don't even know how to just call him like a bad guy or something. But, you know, with me, he always do that villain stuff to me, you know, try to split my teams up and things like that. But he has killers around him. He has guys that can knock down the shot. And, yes, I do agree with you. He does need to knock down that shot at a more consistent rate to threaten the defense. Because if they step out there, he can race to the rim. And literally, this is what Giannis will do. And I'm not lying. If he's out, shoot, I'm on with this step even further. If he's at the half court line and takes two steps, he's at the rim. I'm not lying. It's like bad how his stride is. So, like, if he could knock down a shot and then have the defense come out there and commit, and he could just pump and then take that dribble, he's at the rim. Like, period. Like, your big man is in a lot of trouble. He might not even just jump. He might as well just let that happen. But he has guys that are coming out there knocking down shots at a consistent rate. They are at the top of the Eastern Conference, right behind the Raptors, because the Raptors have more games played, but they have 10 losses on the season right now. This is excellent, especially with their winning rate on the road. They are above 500 winning on the road as well. So this is good for this Milwaukee Bucks team. But I agree with Royce. If he can knock down a shot and make him that much more dynamic, but I don't think that he's out of the run by any means. He has them atop of the league, not just the Eastern Conference, atop the league right now. If you look at the Bucks, I can't look past Giannis. I have to say Giannis first and everybody else. Like, I can't really just overlook the play of everybody else on this Bucks team, but I think that he is put in the lines of, you know, Kawhi, LeBron, Giannis, Jokic. I'm trying to just throw these off of my head quickly.
Anthony Davis.
AD, of course, but they're struggling. I don't even know how they could put him in the conversation.
Let me spice this up. So
Hold on, brother. Defer one time.
Because in the most recent 7 days, there's been a lot of conversation about your guy on your team. And this is why I know you're trying to run. Y'all know how you do Sports City when it comes to the Oklahoma City Thunder, Russell Westbrook, and now Paul George. I need to hear, Sports City needs to hear, GP Thomas discuss the legitimate candidacy of Paul George, league MVP. Is he legit? Do you see him as an MVP candidate right now? Your thoughts, Timeless. People want to know.
This dude is so funny, Sports City. Like, he's funny. Okay, like, I'm trying to mention everybody else.
There he goes.
Just putting my feet to the fire. There was a song back in the late 80s, early 90s. We Didn't Start the Fire. I don't know if y'all ever heard it. It's like a pop song back in the day, I remember. But I didn't start the fire. So, oh, goodness. So Russ's situation, it bothers me because of the way that he's missing every shot. It's not even just from the field. He's missing free throws, and he's shooting below 70%. He's in the 60s with his free throw shooting. It's totally unacceptable. I don't know how they continue to try and put these wins together. What you're doing well as a third seed in the Western Conference at this point in time, but I don't even want to say, oh, Russ needs to see a shooting coach and try to knock down the three throws. He knows what it's going to have to take now. To look outside of Russell Westbrook, the crazy part about it is I didn't even think that he would be able to do this right now. He's averaging another triple-double for the season right now. If he does this again for the third season in a row, I don't know what else to say. And I'm definitely – there's a lot of stuff that just happened, I want to say, in the past 2 weeks outside of his poor shooting that I want to actually revisit the discussion that we had on him being better than Jason Kidd. That was another interesting debate we had in the kitchen. I love that, and I definitely want to revisit it, but not at this point in time. Paul George at this point in time, I don't know how or why voters or people across the NBA that are – considering the players that are supposed to be in the MVP voting are overlooking what Paul George is able to do. This dude is like Dalsum Fighter. I don't know if y'all ever played Street Fighter, but he was like Yoga Fire, flame. Like everything Dollar did, it was fire. Like if Paul George skinny tail, because I not to say that he's skinny like Dawson, but he's, you know, I'm just being funny. But if he continues to play like this, the one thing that I don't like about Paul George, this is the one thing I don't like about Paul George, is that he's so passive. Like I don't even know if I'm using passive right in this situation. I really say, like, he's so unselfish. Like, he wants to get everybody else involved.
That's a better word.
Including Terrence Ferguson, like, trying to make everything work around him. And then it's like, once halftime commits, it's like, okay, he tasted blood. Like, they punch him in the mouth. He got a sip of Gatorade. Now it's in him. And he starts that scoring. And it's like from everywhere. Like, everywhere. Like, not only is he knocking down the three at an alarming rate, he can get below perimeter and make things happen. He can finish at the rim. He can dunk. If he commits to going to the rim, and a lot of these guys try to close him out, they let Steven Adams finish. For him to have career highs, this is why I'm putting Paul George in that conversation of MVP. For him to have career highs in five statistical categories across the board, career high, not just a high this season. This is the best that he's ever played all around. Like, so looking at what Paul George is able to do, one, I'm looking like, and this is why I try to, like, not talk about my team, because it's like, oh, Ty being biased. He like talking about his boy. Like, where do they give Billy Donovan some credit on what he's been able to do right now outside of Russ's play? Like Russ is averaging a triple-double, but he's playing poorly. And they're still able to win, and they're still one of the top three teams in the Western Conference. They have the same amount of losses as the Warriors at this point in time. They split with the Warriors at that, too. So it's like, man, like a lot of things are, you know, me being a Thunder fan, like, I want to see them win more and win the games that they should win, but it's basketball. Things can happen. But for the way that they've been able to play, the way that Russ has been able to defer and let Paul George kind of carry the load, if you will, this has been excellent work up until this point. I just want to see how they can close out this year of 2018 going into 2019 and making a stronger push toward, you know, the month of January and seeing how they can get closer to the heat of things as the month of February, March starts to approach. But as of this month of December, Paul George already won Player of the Month in the Western Conference. And this is alongside LeBron playing as strong as he's been playing in the Western Conference as well. And Jokic playing as strong as he's been playing in the Western Conference as well. And Anthony Davis as strong as he's been playing in the Western Conference as well. Paul George, without a doubt, should be considered as an MVP candidate, but they are not giving him his credit or due. They have the front five. I think it's Steph, Giannis, Kawhi, LeBron, Curry are the five, or Anthony Davis is one of them. I think that's how they have it. They do not have Paul George up there, and it's like, what else does he have to do? Does he really have to score 30? Do they have to go on like a 12-game winning streak for you guys to give him the credit? So it's like, I don't understand.
Do I hear requests for more fire, for more spice on this dish? So I think I did get the order for more spice. Here we go, Timeless. More spice. If you had to decide between Paul George and Giannis for league MVP, if you were a writer, if you had a vote, who gets the vote? Who gets the vote? And here's the thing I'm going to ask you to do, because this is what hopefully some writers who might be listening, I'm asking them to do. Let's not penalize Paul George because Russell Westbrook is a former MVP and is currently on this roster. And statistically on paper, he's averaging 20 points, 10.7 rebounds, and 10.2 assists, right? But Paul George is averaging 26 points, 8.4 rebounds, 4.3 assists. Together, Russell Westbrook is at number one. Paul George sits at number two in steals in the entire NBA. The Oklahoma City Thunder as a team sit at 10.36 steals per game. Make the case for the guy that wins league MVP. Timeless vote. Who wins timeless vote? Doesn't mean it's just going to be a race between Paul George and Giannis, but people are talking about those guys. And both of these guys have some people who are on the fence. They got people who believe that they're legit candidates. Others feel like, you know, something's missing and, you know, yeah, we can talk about them, but chances of them winning it not going to happen. Make a case. Like, what is it? What would it take for Giannis to be league MVP? What would that Milwaukee Buck team have to do this season? And saying, does he have to do? And what does that current team have to do with their season for him to get the nod? George or Antetokounmpo?
There's a song from like the 60s, 50s, and it started off like this. You shake my nerves and you battle my brain system. The name of the song is Goodness Gracious. Great Balls of Fire. And literally, the way that these guys play, those balls are on fire, and no pun intended. Pause if you think it's funny. You know what I'm saying? But let me start with the Bucks first. The Bucks, to continue to play the way that they are, I don't think that, they, you know, the slogan goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What do you need to change? It's like they have one of the best records in the league right now. 10 losses. If they're to change, like, what do you want to take from Giannis other than have him in the gym, I guess, earlier and shoot around, have him take another 30 shots, but you don't want to tire him. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's all it's going to take for them to get better. If Giannis could knock down a shot consistent, like, yes, he's going to knock down shots. This basketball, it's a miss and make situation, so it could happen. But I wouldn't change anything. But what the Bucks are doing right now, they're comfortable and confident with what they've been able to do at this point in time right now. So, like I said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Giannis is comfortable the way that they're playing right now, and especially when he's doing things also on the floor for this team, because he is the guy. When you say Milwaukee Bucks, you're thinking about Giannis. Now, Paul George, on the other hand, right? And this is me because I'm the fan of the team. You know what I'm saying? Even though I'm being analytical of the team also, but he's asking me this personally, so I'm going to come at this personally. And it's personal. If Paul George could be a killer throughout the game, I'm talking about throughout the game, that would give me his nod for the MVP. And win games, too. Not just, oh, he's killing in the midst of the game, and he ends up with a 30-point night, 40-point night, you know, not nothing like that. But if he's able to do it from first quarter when the shots are there for him, not to just say, oh, I'm going to take the shot, just to take the shot and knock it down. No. If it's within the offense, and it's tough for me to say this, but some would be kind of selfish as the clock approaches like 9-8 seconds in the shot clock, and he could just pull up right there. If the matchup favors him or he has to step on the guy, he could just jab him and pull up for a shot, then it's different. I like that for Paul, but Paul is so team-worthy. He's so conscious of everybody on the team. He's so friendly with everybody on that team. I mean, Terrence Ferguson is his guy. Him and Jeremy Grant, like, these guys are buddies. Like so it's like he wants to get these guys involved, which I give him the leg up on that. I want to say that, how do I say that, joint leadership role between him and Russ, because they're actually carrying that together, even though this is Russ's team. But I think Paul George is outside of Russ with the leadership quality also. But if Paul George could be a killer from first quarter to fourth quarter and I feel like I'm pushing the envelope, but if he could ramp this up, like his scoring total per game, then let's just say 30. I'll just say 30 at night, which is you know, he can do. He can do it. And then they're winning games also, which I think that'll also help because, to be honest, they have to get the ball out of Russ's hands, especially in the fourth quarter where he's taking those crazy shots and it's costing the team. He's taking those shots, and it's another possession for the other team, and it's like they got to force a defensive play, whether it's a steal or a defensive rebound, and come back on the other end and try to score along with them. And it's great that Presti was able to go get Dennis Schroeder, because once they bring Schroeder in, it kind of calms Russ down or gets the ball away from Russ and then work the offense on the other side of the floor. But if Paul George could actually score more, and I feel like I'm pushing the envelope, but if he could just average like his 30 to 32 points a game, there's no question that he would be in the conversation. If I had to pick between the two, it's not fair to ask me because I'm going to go with Paul George. But the way that Giannis has been playing, there's no way that I'm overlooking what he's able to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he's in the Eastern Conference where if I look at the Eastern Conference, the top, and I'm going to be fair, the top six have winning records, even though the sixth seed is a 500, where I can really say from 6 to 16 – have 500 or lower. You know what I'm saying? So it's like it therefore Giannis take advantage of the situation for him to be better or help his team win games moving forward. So I would give the leg up to Paul because he's able to do this in the stronger Western Conference. But I can't overlook what Giannis has been able to do right now. I can't. I even as much as I tried, I'm being biased.
So
like,
loud
I am going
and proud, your vote would go to Paul George. Is that what you're saying?
Right. He's doing that to me.
Y'all heard him tap dancing for City. He was tap dancing. He had to get a vote. He can't split his ballot. He got to vote one or the other.
Challenge.
Thank you.
Challenge.
Thank you, Mr. Tyrone Powell. Appreciate you.
That boy is so terrible. He's terrible, man.
Yeah. Look, if I had a vote for just those two guys, I too would vote for Paul George for the exact same reasons, pretty much that you stated and what I alluded to earlier. The fact that Giannis, while he's putting up outstanding numbers, I had it in front of me, and then I jumped in and out to Oklahoma City, but if you give me a second to go back to it, I got to give him his just due, his props. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 26.4 points per game, 12.8 rebounds, 5.9 assists, 1.32 steals, 1.42 blocks per game, right? This guy is super efficient. He does his damage early in the game, depending on matchups. He might have a lull. He might get in foul trouble, or because his team, they got multiple, 15-plus point scorers on their team. Three other guys doing better than 15 a game, and Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, and Malcolm Brogdon, they're still able, Coach Budenholzer, spread the love around, share that ball. These guys are shooting efficiently as a squad. 50% from the field for Bledsoe, 50% from the field for Brogdon, and Middleton's usually right around 46 to 47, and he's shooting a career low, 41%, yet he's still second on the team in scoring. He's a leader. He's locked in. But Giannis, man, I'm just telling you, because, like, Giannis' best chance is Giannis has to play decoy, but is he really a decoy late in games when you need to get a shot off in 1 second or less? Forget 1.3 or 1.5. If you got 0.6, right? Like, everybody's going to know if it's 0.7 or less and it has to be a play at the basket, it's going to Giannis. But you can't even seem to use Giannis as a decoy because he doesn't knock down enough perimeter shots for us to say, well, let's be concerned with Giannis, at the three-point line. Like, yo, I'm not running Giannis off the three-point line. I'm like, take it. Like, if you can make it, hey, you earned it. Prove it, right? But Paul George has on Giannis the fact that he can score at all three levels and Giannis can't. Giannis's points in the paint, dominant, period, dot, end of how he gets his buckets, discussion. Paul George, I'm in the paint, I'm in the mid-range, I'm in the three-point line. All three levels, Paul George gets buckets. He defends, he rebounds, he assists. I mean, like, what's the difference between George and Giannis? A three-point shot. That's the difference. A perimeter jumper. I can make free throws. Giannis is getting to the line at a high, high rate. You're talking 9.1 free throw attempts per game. But he's only shooting 70%. Sometimes games are being decided because not the jump shot he missed, but the free throws he missed. He's not always able to overcome that Achilles at the free throw line, much like LeBron James, who's won multiple league MVPs, but still, struggled from the free throw line throughout his career. Paul George, if I had to vote today, would get my vote if the only two options are Paul George and Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Fair enough, Sports City. He wants to cook that dish. Believe me, I try to steer clear of the madness because I know how people are like, oh, what's Ty? He talking about the time to talk about? No, I'm like, that's RTV for you. That's RTV. But the crazy thing is just watching him play in the midst of the defense being Paul George. And I know Giannis is, you know, he's getting his steals and he's getting his blocks, but watching Paul George on the defensive side of the ball, and of course, me, as when I was younger, you just hope to see that your favorite player get the ball and try to score, dunk, do whatever he can. Just watching the Thunder get on D, and when the other offense is trying to move the ball or passing, and Paul George just plays the passing lane so crisp, it's like, wow. Like just knowing how him and Russ have been timing these dudes, it's like, it's excellent. It is excellent. And I you know, of course, I'm being biased in this situation because it's the team that I watch the most, but it's like, it's crazy to watch how these guys come up with steal after steal and turn teams over. They've been turning over the league's best. So, but mm-hmm. Let me get away from
this. Don't leave out Steven Adams and Dennis Schroeder getting their hands in those cookie jars.
Right. And they're coming up with cookies. They're coming up with cookies also. But we were stressing the fact that Paul George. I mean, I can talk about the others. Of course, I can talk about the others. But, you know, just stressing the fact that Paul George has been doing this across the board, rebounds, points, steals, assist, block. Even he's been blocking shots. Like, man, it's tough. It's tough for me not to be hype about it. But they have to win more. They have to win. Their last 10 games, they're 5-5. They're on a 2-game losing streak right now, too. They got to do more right now. They have to.
So, look, we got about 5 minutes left before we get off this air, man. So, we got two late games. Actually, three. We kind of talked about the Lakers and a little bit about the Sacramento Kings. Philly played on Christmas. They got Utah, who also played on Christmas, along with the Portland Trail Blazers and the Warriors. So, not going to ask you much about your thoughts on those teams because I think we've covered those squads. But let me ask you this. I need you to pick me three winners, three remaining games. Lakers at Kings at 10. Who you got?
Sacramento.
It can be short and sweet.
I got Sacramento
at home.
Yeah.
All right.
I think De'Aaron Fox is a problem. He's a problem.
Agreed. He's a problem. At 10:30 on TNT. We got the Philadelphia 76ers on the road. Now, this is one of the best teams in the NBA and in the Eastern Conference. But, Timeless, I got to be honest about my boys. When you come to Philly, chances are you're going to get your head knocked. But on the road, they ripe for the pickings. They struggle on the road. Sub-500 team on the road. Can they go into Utah, one of the most difficult places to get a road win? Your thoughts?
It's tough for me to say this, but I'm going to go with Philadelphia in Utah. I think Embiid cancels out Gobert, and they go at that rim. If they go at that rim, it puts pressure on the rest of that defense. I want to see the rest of that Utah team play D. And if Ingles can stay with Simmons, which I highly doubt.
Interesting. I'm going to say my picks after you get this last one of yours. We got the Portland Trail Blazers on
favorite,
the road.
Favorite,
Damian
favorite,
Lillard
favorite,
back.
Favorite.
Damian
favorite,
Lillard.
Favorite,
Damian Lillard
point,
back.
Favorite.
Save it.
Don't do it.
Save, don't do
see,
it.
You already know. You already know what I'm about to do. If you don't know. Portland's been losing too many questionable games, and it's outside of my boys CJ and Dame. Like, they need the others to step up. These two do so. I feel so bad. It's like I wish I could just join them on the Thunder. Like, we good. Like that's it. Like, just leave Portland, come to Oklahoma. We good. Like, the both of y'all, just pack your thing, gather your things, let's go. But it's like, y'all got to stay there. And if the rest of the team don't show up, y'all going to lose the game. Portland got blown out at home, like to Utah. Bad. They lost by 30. Like, come on. They're going into the Oracle. I highly say this. There's no way. There's no way. I'll give you 10. If there's a 10-point spread on it, I'm going with Golden State.
You cooked them. The Blazers just got cooked. All right. Look, so real quick, I'm with you, Timeless. I think the Sacramento Kings get the win over the Los Angeles Lakers tonight at home. I'm not going to be a homer. Look, you are who your player card says you are, and the Philadelphia 76ers team player card says they're woeful on the road. Home court advantage comes into play tonight on TNT. I would love for Philly to prove me wrong, but I'm going with hashtag team is everything, Utah Jazz, for the win. And obviously, it's a sweep here. Dub Nation thumps the Portland Trail Blazers, hashtag Brit City. Look, it's about bouncing back. And I just think the better team between Portland and Golden State is obviously Golden State. No question.
Listen, don't forget that this is the game, right? Before this season started, 2018-2019 season started, there was a debate or debacle going on between Kevin Durant and C.J. McCollum. So this game is one that'll get your popcorn ready, but I know if C.J. go on a little tear, if C.J. score like 5 or 6 points straight, believe me, you know 35 is going to get the ball. It might be a problem tonight. I will be watching this one closely too, and this isn't even a featured game actually. So TNT will be watching the Philadelphia Utah game. I hope that I can get some live look-ins on it, but I will be trying to pay attention to it. That's for sure.
No doubt.
Okay, so we
man,
are
shut the tail this thing end down, man. Let's get up out of here.
Okay, I got you. Okay, well, we are the tail end of the show. R. Keith, you already know what to do. Put the lid on everything, shut the lights, and shut down this cafe for the evening.
Hey, man. Sports City Chef's Crossover Cafe, Master Chef Edition. It's your boy, Royce King. You can follow me on Twitter, at Royce King. You can follow on Instagram, at Royce King Sports. We doing what we can do to keep it live and popping out here. If you're playing the fantasy game, tune into the NBA Fantasy Hour on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/NBA and get those goodies every Thursday. Tune in next Thursday. Every Thursday. NBA Fantasy, Sports City Chefs, Crossover Cafe, man. We doing this basketball thing and we doing it big.
I gotta get him on the show before next Thursday, man, so he can talk about his Cowboys, man. SportsCityChefs.com. Check out the website and read the blog. The chefs will be back here supposedly Saturday. If not, the brunch will be open Sunday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. Royce think he's slick trying to slide me that PG Giannis stuff. And if you don't know, now you know.